This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
I'm interviewing Dr. Matthias Vidal, who's a postdoctoral researcher here at the Jodrell Banks Centre for Astrophysics. Welcome again to the Jodcast.
Thank you.
You were interviewed first as a PhD student, and you were studying the cosmic microwave background, or maybe things around that. And now you've got a new paper that's come out. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, my PhD was focused on CMB science, not particularly in cosmology, but in the galactic science. When we observe with radio telescope the CMB, most of the emission that we see comes from our own galaxy. It's diffuse galactic emission.
So it's stuff that people will be trying to get rid of if they wanted to actually observe the background.
Cosmologists tries to treat this as a contamination signal, but galactic scientists treat it as the signal that they want to study. So yeah, my PhD was focused on that, in studying these foregrounds in both polarization and total intensity.
Okay, so the polarization, just for a really quick example, what does the polarization of a signal mean?
Electromagnetic radiation, say light, radio waves, and infrared emission, has this property of polarization, which is only telling us the direction in which the electromagnetic wave is oscillating. If you have a lot of photons, a lot of electromagnetic waves, and they are oscillating in an other direction, say all of them are oscillating vertically, we will say that that wave is linearly polarized. So in general, say the emission from the sun will be a superposition of waves polarized in many, many directions. So when you observe it, it will look like it's unpolarized because all the directions are equally populated. But some astrophysical processes have some preferred directions. So you measure by using a polarimeter, you can understand something about the geometry of the emission. So that's what it is. And in CMB science, it's very important because the polarization of the CMB have additional cosmological information that cannot be recovered by only measuring the total intensity. So that's why it's interesting.
But it's a hard signal to measure, as I guess we've been learning from recent results on the CMB.
The CMB is a small fraction that is actually polarized. It can be as small as 1%. It depends on the angular sky that we're observing. But because the galactic emission is so bright, measuring the polarization of the CMB is a very tough thing to do, because first you need to sort of understand what the emission from the galaxy is doing, and then subtract that. And in polarization, what is left is very little. So that's why only now we have telescopes with large sensitivity to measure this small signal.
And what have you found out about our galaxy from these polarization measurements?
Okay, so I was studying the large-scale polarization of the sky, trying to see structures that cover a large area in the sky, using WMAP data, which was a satellite that was observing the cosmic microwave background, and it stopped observing at 2010. And it gives us, for the first time, images of how the polarized sky looks at frequencies of around 30 GHz, which are high frequencies in radio astronomy for this type of science. And the sort of striking result is that the sky is full of filaments and loops and spurs that are very large, more than 100 degrees. So they cover large fractions of the sky. If you could see them with your eyes, you will see like going from one side of the sky to the other,
wow,
like covering the entire sky. And in the non-polarized sky, in the normal radio sky that we know from before, from old radio surveys, the most of the emission comes from the galactic plane, and at high latitude there are a few bright features. But when you look in polarization, you see the galactic plane, but then at high latitude, the only thing you see is these filaments. The filaments have been known since the 50s, 60s, when the first radio surveys were carried out in the entire sky. But it's just now that we have this data and we can see that in polarization they are so strikingly bright, and it's the only important thing that we see in the sky.
Yeah, I think from images that people might have seen of radio maps of the sky, there's one in particular really huge kind of loop that you see, which I think is called the North Polar Spur.
Yeah, the North Polar Spur.
But you found many of these then, is that right?
Yeah, so the North Polar Spur is the oldest spur, and it's described in a paper of 1956. So that one is sort of well known. But yeah, as I was telling you, in polarization now we can number a lot of these features. And the interesting thing is that most of them seem to have like a circular shape, that are pieces of arc of a circle. We have this geometry. So that we believe that that is giving us clue about what is the origin of these things.
I was going to say, yeah, do we have any idea where they've come from, or what they're made of, or how old they are?
So in radio astronomy, we know the physics of how the gas and the medium is emitting the radiation. And we can, by measuring the spectrum of the radiation, the spectrum is just the ratio of how bright a feature is in between two different frequencies, you can know which type of radiation is. And in this case, we know that the radiation comes from a process that is called synchrotron emission, where you have electrons traveling at almost the speed of light, spiraling around magnetic field lines. So these have been known for a long time ago, because people made observations at different frequencies. So we know that this is synchrotron radiation that has to do with the magnetic field. And following that, there have been a number of different theories, hypotheses to what is the origin of these loops. Some people claim that they are the shell of a supernova explosion that is expanding, and we just see an arc, circular arc, because we're seeing the border of the shell. And when we look through the shell, we don't see much, just because the column density, the amount of gas that is along the line of sight, is very small. But you go closer to the border, you have more gas, so it's more visible to us. But it's only a shell-like structure and not a disk, what we see in the sky. So, and other people have, these things are connected with activity in the galactic center. In the supermassive black hole that is at the center of the Milky Way, there is some sort of AGN activity that...
So they, just to explain to people then, the black hole would be consuming material, or material would be circulating around it, and that would give rise to the magnetism.
Yeah, material that had fell to the black hole at some point in history, then it was ejected vertically, perpendicular to the galactic plane at very large distances, and then will be the source of these structures. But if you think about these two explanations, the supernova hypothesis or the black hole, are completely different. If this is a supernova shell, it has to be very close, very nearby to the sun, because we see these things crossing the entire sky. So supernova remnants has to be very close to be such a large thing in the sky. But if it's something related with the galactic center, which is very far away, 8 kiloparsec, that would mean that this is just huge, and it's something with galactic scale of sizes. So,
wow. So it's not possible then to say exactly how far away these things are very easily?
That's the main issue. Determining the distances to these filaments is very difficult, because they are only bright and visible in synchrotron emission, and there is not clear correlations with any non-cloud of gas or something that we know the distance. So I think that's the main limitation, actually. And that's why theories have so different physics and different scales in sizes and energy are still there and competing, because we don't know yet the distance. That's the main issue. If we knew the distance, then everything would be much easier.
So I guess with supernovas, we could say we would kind of understand what happens when a star explodes in a supernova. But if it was an active phase for our Milky Way, what would that have meant for the galaxy when that was happening? Say it was a few million years ago. Would that have had a profound effect on our galaxy?
That's a good point.
Even probably, on life on Earth?
Yeah, or? We observe many galaxies are active galaxies, and they have this activity jet emission. And we see that those galaxies at some point behave differently than the galaxies that don't have that emission. The star forming rates are different. And so I don't know if it would have had any effect on life on Earth if it was something that happened recently at the center of the galaxy, because, anyways, it's very far away.
Maybe not as extreme as some...
As a nearby supernova.
A nearby supernova, yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
So I think that there are good arguments to investigate it. Like, okay, if we think that these things are coming from the galactic center, which other evidence might be related with an episode of AGN activity. I'm not so sure that this is something feasible, actually, but still, I mean, the theories are there, like people presenting these ideas, so I don't think it's something so well understood.
Yeah, it sounds like quite a mystery. But maybe as a last thing, I might just ask about a connection with the cosmic microwave background, because it has been suggested, not in your paper, but elsewhere, that these loops could give rise to some polarized emission that people doing the BICEP 2 experiment could have mistaken for the signal from gravitational waves in the early universe.
Yeah, I think that detecting the gravitational waves is a very tough thing. And yeah, the BICEP result relies on a well-known level of foreground emission in the patches that they observe. And we don't know for sure what is the amount of emission that our own galaxy is radiating in those fields. They rely the result in some modeling and assumptions, but not based on real data. What we really need to do is to know what the dust grains are doing in polarization at those frequencies. And the dust grain will emit polarized emission in a similar way to synchrotron emission. It's connected also with the magnetic field. The orientation of the grains will be ordered if there is a magnetic field around. So if some of these loops that we see in synchrotron radiation are going through the same patch BICEP telescope observed, we know that there will be some magnetic field there. And if there is some dust particles, there will be some degree of emission from the dust that will contaminate the area for the CMB. But till the moment there is not such a big map of polarized emission, we don't know. But that is going to change very soon, because Planck satellite is doing exactly that, making a dust map in both total intensity and polarization of the entire sky. So I think that will settle, or at least we will know if the BICEP result could be accepted after we see those maps. It's going to be by the end of this year.
Well, that's really interesting. It sounds like your results will help us to maybe at some stage understand what's going on in our galaxy a bit better, and also help people who are trying to scrub the galaxy out of their maps to get rid of things a little bit better and see what's behind it.
The signal that all cosmologists are trying to find in this polarized CMB, what people try to measure is called the power spectrum, which is how the radiation varies as a function of angular sizes in the sky. So this power spectrum is like two little mountains, one at large angular scales and one small angular scales. So large angle scales means that we need to know what the sky looks like over the entire sky. And smaller angular scales means that we can make observation in smaller fields. But to be really sure that the signal that we're looking at is inflation, we ideally would like to see both. So that's why it's important to know what the large scale structure of the sky is. And that's why we need to take these filaments and all this information about the galactic magnetic field into consideration. I think that's why this is useful, because it's showing that there is large coherent structure that cross the entire sky, and they will have to be taken into account when subtracting all the contamination from the CMB.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.